Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for more than 44 years, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of the radio and talk to each other, and hopefully we inform each other, we learn from each other, and we entertain each other. And once again, I thank you for returning this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those are questions usually asked on the technical net, but if you wouldn't be available during the technical net, you can email them to me. We could discuss them, and you can listen to the results either live or via internet stream or via archived sound file. Or if you have technical expertise in some subject that's come into the news and you'd like to share it, please let me know and we'll give you some time for that. Or if you have any what we still call TechNet puzzles, those are kind of interesting teasers that kind of make us remember things that we've long forgotten and is a source for usually some interesting conversation. They're as rare as hen's teeth, but when I find one, I thankfully share it with all you guys and gals. So if you have any, please email it, and if it's appropriate, we'll give it a spin. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at some NASA space-related story, of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, we have link pages. Every week I kind of cut and paste, collect a bunch of interesting stories or YouTubes or what have you, and put them together on my link page, and you can get to it by just typing in roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the links. They're available 24/7. You could read them at your leisure. We have a chat room available. You access it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And as I mentioned earlier, we offer an audio stream on the internet of the TechNet, and I keep the connection live the rest of the week for the most part, so you can listen into the Glen Oaks repeater without a handy talkie. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and it will land you on the streaming page. And I always like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it archives the technical net for as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of the wisdom of people who either moved away or passed away. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I got planned. Okay, it's going to be one of our standard operating nights. I will ask for questions and topics and comments of a technical nature. Hopefully the first few will be amateur radio related, but we keep things open for any science or technologically based conversation, and I'll try my best to do my part as, offering references or information if I have any. That should take us, hopefully, to about 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us to approximately 11 o'clock, when I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the following week. Earlier I mentioned my link page, roy.ac2gs.com. One of the articles mentions that NASA and such think that we've just about hit the peak of solar activity for this sunspot, number 25. It should be very active for another year or so, and then slowly as time goes on, the sunspot activity will get less and less, and our lovely 10-meter propagation will get worse and worse. So enjoy it while you got it, guys and gals. This is about as good as it's supposedly going to get. Anyway, with all that in mind, it's time for the questions, comments, and topics segment. So if anyone has any of those, again, preferably the first few should be amateur radio related. Please, hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
And to extend the first topic, these ham radio related, the rest of them are science related.
Good evening.
When's recognized?
This is Brian. This is a ham-related question, amateur radio. My call is Kilo Delta 2, Romeo Echo Kilo, KD2REK. Thank you.
Brian, do you want to give your call sign out? Some people might not know you yet.
Surely, I did, phonetically and mechanically, but I guess it didn't go through. Kilo Delta 2, Romeo Echo Kilo, it's KD2REK, Brian.
Okay, very good. Yeah, unfortunately, I fell out of All-Star during you telling me that. So I didn't hear anything. But thank you, Brian. Anyone else want to check in tonight? Please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Back control. AC2PL, Jeff.
Jeff, recognize? Wesley, I understand that your first question is going to be amateur radio related, but you have a whole bunch of other that aren't. So would you mind if we shuffle the deck and we do Brian and Jeff first and you third?
Of course. No problem.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wes. Brian, what's your question, comment, or topic for tonight?
Brian, KD2REK. Thank you, Wes. I appreciate it. Good evening, everybody. My question is, a manufactured antennas by M2. I have them for M2. I have them on a G5500 Yaesu rotator, X and Y. And the question is, they're approximately 65 inches long, each one of them. That's really long, coming off the center bar. I'm worried that in the wintertime, if we have an ice storm, it's just going to bend them right off, and it's going to destroy my rotator. So the question is, now that you have the picture, can I mount a little closer towards the center of that 63 inches, or do I have to mount it on the end? I'd like to mount it about 2 to 2.5 feet in, so it's balanced on the rotator, and I'm not getting that all that weight coming off. Thank you.
Okay, I mean, I don't unfortunately have any particular expertise on big antennas with rotors and such, but I can't see any particular reason why you can't mount it in the middle. As long as it doesn't bang up against any of the elements, the mast should be primarily, isolated from the radiator, the reflector, and the director. So is it designed to be mounted at the edge, and there's no option to be mounted in the middle?
Good question. I've only seen one image on the internet, searching Google, that I have an option to mount it on the middle, and that's not from the manufacturer. The instructions say mount it on the end, and there's a specific end they want it mounted to. Every other photograph and video I've seen is mounted on the end. But I know the ice storms we get, and I'm just looking at it. The leverage is going to get destroyed. M Squared is a very good manufacturer. It is, again, 2 meter and a 70 centimeter. They're approximately, again, 65 inches long. And I think that's a lot of weight coming off the end. It shouldn't be a problem. I mean, I've seen the guys, you know, they'll hold their 2 meter or the 70 centimeter antennas by hand in the middle. They're not holding them at the direct end. I was just curious if it's going to affect anything. That's all. Sorry for the generalities, but I don't know if it's going to get affected. That's all. I was curious if you know. Over to you, Roy. Thank you.
Okay. Again, I don't really see any reason why it would be screwed up if it was mounted in the middle. Again, the mast should be an isolated structure, so mounting anything to any portion of the mast, the only problem would be mechanical if the mast wasn't designed to take it in the middle, but you know, that's a simple case of drilling a hole, worst case scenario, or kind of designing some kind of side clamp for it. I mean, let me ask you a silly question. Have you considered calling up M Squared? Because, you know, they're a legit company. They're not out of business yet, thankfully. So have you considered just kind of knocking on their door and asking them what's so special about the end that you can't put it in the middle? Because I would agree with you. I think it would be structurally a lot more stable if you balanced it. You know, not necessarily even just the middle, but just the balancing point would give it a kind of second lease on life, because I agree with you. It might be fine in low wind conditions in the summer, but in the winter, if it gets a nice layer of ice covering the whole darn thing and then the wind blows, you're going to be in trouble. The air resistance is going to increase, and that's going to be a mess. So have you ever considered calling up good old M Squared?
I haven't. That's a good solution. a good thing to do. I'll give them a ring. If we're not positive, and we'll see what the answer is. And I will update next week. I thank you for taking the time, as always. You're extremely appreciated. I really enjoy this every week. So whether I add or I listen, it's always been great. Thank you for all you do. KD2REK will be on the side unless you have another question. Thank you.
No, AC2GS. Thank you so much for the kind words, Brian. I really do appreciate it. I'm going to be very curious for the next week, waiting to hear what M Square uses as a reason why the end is the best mounting position. But we'll see what happens next week. I wish you good luck with it, and I look forward to hearing the solution to that riddle.
Thank you, Roy. That's fine. KD2REK will be listening.
Okey-doke. Next on our list is Jeff, AC2PL. What you got for tonight, Jeff?
AC2GS, AC2PL. Yeah, thanks, Wes, for yielding the floor for a minute. Just a quick question, or maybe, I hope. And it's kind of hypothetical, but it could be practical if the answer turns out one way or the other. I was thinking about the kind of helical, circularly polarized antennas that people use, you know, for example, for speaking to satellites, what have you. You know, we're always taught that you want to use the same polarization antenna for receiving whoever's transmitting. The question is, what is the loss, the theoretical loss in dB if you're receiving on a circularly polarized antenna of the appropriate frequency for someone who's transmitting on, let's say, a dipole that's horizontal QSL?
Okay. Well, I think, I'm not sure, but I think it's basically very similar to if you oriented a regular linear antenna at a 45-degree angle. So I think it's about a 3 dB loss. I'd have to kind of look at it again, but I think I read someplace approximately 3
dB. Hey, JPL. Yeah, Roger, thank you. That's a very quick and easy answer. And is there, in your opinion, is there any benefit to operating a circularly polarized antenna to pick up, you know, things that have been reflected in various different ways in a practical sense, not in the theoretical sense?
Yeah, matter of fact, I'm sure you remember there was a lot of discussion of a weird antenna called the Compactenna. It was basically a wound helical design squat that went on mobile devices. The benefit of those antennas was because I believe, and the designer kind of fudged the answers of why it worked better in garages and such and off of reflections, is because it was circularly polarized. So it didn't give you the best signal when you didn't have any reflections, but when you did have reflections, you had a better signal than you would if you just had a vertical antenna. So there's a lot to be said for using a circularly polarized antenna. You will not reach the highest gain, but it's much more flexible in an urban environment.
Thank you, JPL. Thanks for taking the question, Roy. Yeah, I was going to comment on that, you know, out in the countryside with nothing to reflect off of, probably wouldn't. And that was going to be my next question about the usefulness and the relative usefulness in urban rather than suburban or rural areas. So you've already answered it, and outstanding. If there was an easy way to make one on 20 meters, I would certainly construct it and get it going, but I think that is practically from a construction standpoint not going to happen over here. Anyway, thanks again. Back to Matt, AC2PL.
Okay, I mean, I don't know if you could Google it, but Google it, because you never know. There are crazy people out there, and mechanical constraints mean nothing to some people. You know, there's that Japanese guy who has a 160-meter Yagi on an industrial-strength rotator that he still has to swap out every year or two because the ball bearings just grind themselves away to nothing. So you might as well Google it, and if you find anything interesting, please let us know.
AC2PL. Yeah, well, I certainly will, and I'll start poking around with endless raw supplies in the garage here. Who knows what might happen, and who knows what sort of designs are out there. People try everything, right? Anyway, thanks again. Thanks for all you do for the net, and thank you, Wesley. Again, back to AC2PL. We'll be listening.
Okay, very good. Good luck, Jeff, as always. Stretching the horizons of radio inventiveness. You know, I mean, if you wait long enough, someone's going to try everything. It's just a matter of time and population density of hams. So good luck to you, as always, Jeff. So, Wes, it is your turn. What is your amateur radio? Well, it's not really a question. It's more of a topic. So give us your ham radio topic.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much, N2XGN, is ham radio amplifiers with prizes. So I was not visiting eBay for a long period of time, and I decided to do so, and then I found a strange thing there. And it was, and, okay, oh, I'm sorry. So I wasn't visiting eBay for the long time, and I decided to do so, and I found a strange thing, and it was the edge for the amplifier, ham radio amplifier, from 160 to 50 megahertz, which is great, the price was also not a small one. And then I got in to some doubts. So I decided to Google for it, and I sent it to Dr. Voigt, the list, long list of ham radio amplifiers, all almost amplifiers available on the market. That is listed in our ham radio literature on the internet, eHam. And I concentrated myself on the best amplifier on the list, the best one. So 2 kilowatts plus. And I look at the listing in eBay and it says malfunction, not working. But then I read more of it there and it says it's fully functional. And it is listed under the name IMDB, Octopus Leadmos Amplifier, for $3,499. And I found the same one from the original manufacturer for $2,999, plus eBay fee, plus 30 years warranty only, and no obligation, no chances for the buyer to return it. But the seller says, contact us. If you want us to make a custom-made model for you. And the guy is from Florida. So it is a state-of-the-art amplifier with 5-inch touchscreen measures, forward and reflected power amperage voltage, displays errors. It has a low-pass filter, touch selection, SWR, high temperature, overcurrent, and overpower protection. The guy says that he spent 10,000 hours over 5 years to perfect it and whatsoever. Fine. And in some place it shows that, no, it's 1,500 watt plus, not 2,000. Okay, fine. And it covers from 1H to 54 plus 6 meters. And everything is hunky-dory. It looks beautiful. It has a touch, a screen, big one, with all of the bands possible for it. And then I look at it, and I see that, of course, the number one on the list is VK3 amp. That's that amp that is over 2 kilowatts. And it is reviewed in eHam as absolutely wonderful and Ham Ops dream to come true. It's fine. But it appears that RA2 FAR, which is Russian, Kuzov Lev Andrei from Kaliningrad, from Russia, 338510 Primors Kaliningrad, is making them. It's fine, but we have a sanction. So then I look at his YouTube and I see all of those videos showing how he assembled it and everything whatsoever. And then there was some kind of confusion, because when I went to his videos now, it is not showing his cosine, RA2FAR, but it is showing RZ1, ZR, and 62, which means probably his age. Okay. And I look for VK3 amp, and I found them in Australia. So it looks like that company from Australia is owned by Russian, which is nothing bad. But for some reason, the Florida-based company that put that ad on eBay, that's Lakewood, Florida, United States 33463 eBay listing, mentioned I said that he's selling for $3,499, and exactly the same model, I mean the same amplifier, but reviews on ham radio are negative on this model. So the model is different. And then I read more of the comment on the ham, and I found the names Victor and Yana, which are Russian names. And to make things easier, the Australian company makes amplifiers exactly the same as that Russian guy, and the Florida guy makes them exactly the same. They have the same structure, the same placement of the touch panel, and it's the same panel. But EHAM, and they have different models. So the model, Australian model, is absolutely amazing, and everybody is och and ach, and everybody is happy about it. But the Florida model is absolutely not good, and everybody says there is a waste of money. So I simply can't understand how the guy from Russia, RA2FR, Kuzovlev Andrei Kaliningrad, whose assembly of the same amplifier in his videos is banned by the sanctions, can make good amplifiers in Australia and bad amplifiers in Florida. And his comments on eBay says that it is proudly crafted in USA using local materials and components. Let me drop. Okay. So, he leaves them again, four parts, not working, that amplifier. Then he says at the bottom, the amplifier is working perfectly. The not working of four parts designation is due to eBay policies, which unfortunately benefit the scavengers and scammers. Additionally, the high price is to compensate for fees associated with selling it on this platform, which means on eBay. Please reach out me to discuss pricing or inquire about custom build. Contact information emdbamplifiers.com. Sold as it is, items are sold, sales are final, the return policy says returns are not accepted. So I sent it to Dr. Roy because I was completely confused. We have the same amplifier in Russia that is also manufactured in Australia and is also manufactured in Florida. The Australian one is based on EHAM Excellent. The Florida one is very bad. What's going on? And to here, Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. Well, I can't do magic. I can't read all these guys' minds. I wouldn't touch a linear like that with a 10-foot pole. Because to me, my major concern is I would really like a stable company to be kind of running the warranty and repairs and, you know, whoever it is who invented it, who made up the schematics, he kicks off, you know, he goes on a bender and dies. You have no support, as far as I'm aware. It sort of sounds like this guy knows that he can't sell it in Russia, so he made some deal with a bunch of other guys around the world to manufacture his design and give him a percentage back, maybe. I don't know. And that not all guys who build electronic devices have the same skill sets. And so the guy in Australia probably is a much better technician, and the guy in Florida might solder, cold joints and such. So, but either way, I wouldn't touch it for a whole bunch of reasons. I don't want to give a dime to Russia right now. And it's doesn't sound like a legitimate operation. It sounds like something kind of cobbled together. You know, if I'm going to spend in excess of $3,000, I want to know that there's an actual legitimate company that stands behind it all, which this is not happening for this machine.
Yeah, I thought the same. What you say? But the thing is, if there is a Russian guy who makes the amplifiers in Kaliningrad, actually it was former German territory, and now it's Russian, and he makes them in Australia, how come the guy from Florida uses the same chassis? And this, I mean, the elements could be sent, but the chassis is kind of expensive to be manufactured in Australia and then sent to Florida. Okay, for your curiosity, if you have a time, I have all links available for you. But Australia is selling with warranty, it's selling as a legitimate company, and the guy from Florida says, hey, you know what, I'm listing it as non-working. You have no rights to return. You pay the money, $3,500 roughly, for it. And then after you spend that money, you have only 30 days guarantee, but actually you don't have a guarantee because I'm not giving you guarantee. But on the eBay it says 30-day guarantee. Cash. What the nonsense. And of course, the price of the guy from Florida is much bigger than the price from Australia, because the Australia one is $2,999 and the Florida $3,400 whatever. So, yeah. Okay, if there are no questions, I'm going to go to the next one.
Comment.
Yes, what's your comment, sir?
W1WR, Rob over here in Greenwich. I'm going to stop this conspiracy thoughts here. Kenny, KM3KM from Florida, got the design from Russia with permission to design it. And I've got two of them. I have the Mercury 3, which was my original one, the kit. And I had another one that I bought from somebody because he needed the money. And now I have the Lux amplifier. Let me tell you something. This company in Florida is top grade. They're nothing. You look on EHAM, there is not one negative on it. Let me drop it for a minute. You talk to anybody that owns a Mercury amplifier, and their support and repair service is top class. Number one there. I talked to Kenny, Angel, a number of times. When I talked to Angel, I go, what do you got on the bench? Nothing, Rob. Or another time, what do you got on the bench? Oh, one just came in, it's going out tomorrow morning. So, I don't know where you're buying this from, eBay, and I wouldn't buy it from eBay. Anyway, and they list it as parts there that protect them because of parts swapping there. But I don't know where this Australian Mercury amplifier is coming from, but if you want a Mercury amplifier, go for it. It's worth the wait. I forget how long the three is. The Lux now is maybe a month, maybe 3 weeks now, but I wouldn't. Actually, this company's put the other amplifiers' ears turned up there, and they're probably outselling anything, Acom, Amatron, and all kinds of other amplifiers. I'm just letting you know what the facts are and not a conspiracy thing there. If you can feel comfortable with Mercury KM3M amplifiers.
Okay, thank you. That's good to know. Well, Wesley, yeah, I don't know. eBay is nice for little trinkety things. I don't think I've ever bought anything over $80-$90 from eBay. $3,000, I don't know. I'd get a terrible rash.
All right, if you follow QRZ and QTH there, and you see a Mercury amplifier come up,
amplifier, the Mercury.
Guaranteed, the amplifier it doesn't last that long itself. probably one of the quickest cellars that goes up on QRZ and QPA that you would ever see.
That's
like teleposted LP 100 to 500 power meters, SWR meters. They don't last long. I'm telling you from past experience, and I would buy again from them. Feel very comfortable buying one if you can find a legitimate person to purchase it from. That's the whole thing. You know, we all go on the ham fest and you look over the table and I go, yeah, I just got it from home and plugged it in, it's working fine, you get it, it doesn't work. Mercury got the design permission from the guy in Russia. WNWR.
I started to have a problem, and then he reached the problem. The other one says, the water-cooled unit was good, but, and then it is whatsoever. Then the other one says, bad design product. So they talked about bad cooling, and one of the guys looks like very much knowledgeable, and he said that he threw out the original fans. So it depends on which one you got, and he put four times bigger one, and of course the unit was very, very loud whatsoever. So the bad amplifier from Florida is EB104 group, EB2400, so EB2400 stands for the power. Now, the good one is exactly the same unit, absolutely exactly the same unit, but it's made in Australia and has different part number. So if I open up that link, we're going to have VK Amp DX Master Pro Plus. But I sent you all of those web pages, and there is no difference. All of the connectors are exactly at the same place. The chassis is exactly the same. So the puzzle is how Russians were able to make the manufacturing from the same components. So no problem to send the components from Australia to Florida, but send the chassis. Unless there is no beer operation and those are only in single pieces to be assembled. And to exchange, back to you.
Well, AC2GS, by the way, you were kind of doubling for the first few minutes with the other gentleman who seems to know a lot about these Mercury linear amplifiers. He's gung-ho on it. I'm not really familiar with this brand. I'm doing a little web search here and web search there. Seems to be kind of one of those things that they just kind of build slowly, so you can't just buy one off the shelf unless you go to strange places on eBay and then you got to deal with strange people. So I don't know if this is the greatest linear amplifier ever made. I have an expert system. I'm happy with my expert systems, but certainly eBay is not the place, I think, to buy a $3,000+ piece of equipment, especially when they kind of fill it up with a bunch of warnings. But, you know, I mean, you might want to go to the website, www.km3km.com, I believe, is the appropriate website. The other gentleman can tell me if I'm on the right website or the wrong one.
WNWR, that is correct. And I think you can even maybe find it. Oh, you can, even if you go to EHAM, type in Mercury Amplifier EHAM, and you can go right to their site and see all the reviews on here. And you can click on the site there. Kenny is out of Florida. He's the one, you know, that got the permission from the Russian design. He has Angel working along with him. I don't know if anybody knows N48ATS there. Bill Grass in Florida is an electronic engineer, very, very well known. He was helping Kenny and Angel out there from Mercury Amplifier to assemble the amplifiers for people. And he did my first one, and, you know, I asked Bill, how many have you done for these? And this is going back about a year, a couple of years ago, 150 of them. And he told me, this is quality stuff there. The kits, you know, all the components were together. Basically, you would have to put it in, and I think the only really problem you had is soldering the coax cable. And that's when people had difficulty with it, you know, bending it properly. And people had problems in assembling it. Kenny says, send it down. Free of charge. You know, they paid the shipping and he paid it back. But free of charge, he took the amplifier in and straightened it out for the person and fixed it or whatever. They had a problem with some relays. This problem was solved within days or so. They got a bad batch and people were complaining. I said, any manufacturer amplifier can get a bad batch, no matter how long they've been in business. And they got that all straightened out. So if anybody's listening there, it's the cat's meow now, solid state there. You know, it's you get it in the 1200 watt. That's the Mercury 3, the original one. And then the Lux is the full legal limit. The Mercury 3 does RF censoring, so it'll, as soon as you key up your radio, it'll find, you know, the band that you're on. You don't have to tune it up. If you're putting too much power or whatever, SWR is off, it will go into fail safe, and then you reset it. You can disconnect the coax to this and kick it in. And not blow the amplifier up there. So, all right, I got to walk the doggies. I just, I heard some things about it, and I just want to give my opinion and my support to KM3M there, Kenny and Angel there, fine guys there. WNWR, Robin Greenwich.
Thank you, Rob. Well, thank you for all that information. I didn't expect someone to pop up and be so knowledgeable about this this brand. I did my linear shopping about 8-9 years ago, long before I guess this was a kit. So I haven't kept my eye open for any more linears. I'm happy with my expert systems. I'm glad you're happy with yours as well. And I thank you very much, and hello to your dog. What's your dog's name?
This is Emma and Lily. Lily is 14 and a half, and Emma is 13 and a half. If you go on my QRZ page, you see them with me in my uniform with them sitting there quite a few years back there. The expert amp, you got it, you said 8 years ago, so they had their fair share of problems, and I don't know if there still are there and failures there, but I don't know if they got that straight now. And this is not too long ago. I know some people that have and have had problems, and I know people that sent it back more times there that they end up buying the amplifier back from. So, as it says, knock on wood on the one you got there. But, no, find somebody legit there that is selling it. You can find people on QTH there, QRZ, but they don't last long, you know. And try to find somebody, if you're really interested in it, either order one, or find a person that's close by that you can go by and pick it up and check it out there. So, all right, I used to be on the net there when Dick was still with us, and I knew Andy WA2CDL there, so quite well there. So, anyway, both of them are missed there. So, thank you for letting me break in. I appreciate it. Let me let you get back on with the net. W1WR from Greenwich and Doggy Walking.
I have a question. Because I went to the amplifier, and it looks like it uses the same display. It's a little bit different in structure in the box than the two companies that I was talking about, one from Florida and the other one from Australia, but it uses exactly the same display. So and it's the name Mercury, so I didn't even get into the name Mercury. In EHAM reviews, there is no Mercury name, but I can look at the list that I sent to Dr. Ray. Maybe that amplifier is on the list. So my question to you is, how many watts you have out of that amplifier?
Well, the Mercury 3, I can put 1,200 watts, but I don't push anything to the edge. And I don't know if anybody knows W1QJ there, Lou from King's Conversion. He says, people, you know, they push it right to the edge here. It's not necessary. You're not going to get that much out of there pushing anything to the edge. And a lot of it is repair amplifiers if people were pushing an edge. And there you go. What'd you call it there? Amitron. They only had 8 caps in there on their system, and Lou would replace them with 10 because, you know, they were finding the failures on that. So, look, it's, and if you're looking at the Australian amplifier, the VK3 amplifier, look at that display. Same thing on the Mercury. You look on ACOM's displays. Same things on the Mercury. Those are Geonetics, you know, display screens that anybody can use and set them up there in the software there. So, all right, I got her crossing her eyes now. Let me go before I cross her legs. I'd like to go into a bit more, but feel comfortable with the company. Like I said, Bill Gratz, N4ATS there, who's been around, engineer and people well known for it. He was the last to fix the Yaesu solid-state amplifier and to do the lack of parts there. But when I talked to Mercury in the beginning, all before the pandemic and stuff like that, they bought a stockpile and warehouse their stuff so they could keep up with the components there and go, now, I'm sure, you know, we all heard about that. This can't get fixed and that can't get fixed because can't get parts there. But if you feel comfortable, if you're looking for an amplifier and you're looking for a solid state, you know, no tuning, and look at tubes are getting short too, so feel comfortable with Mercury. Let me get going. Thank you for letting me in. 7-3's everybody over here at Limark, WNWR.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate it. Wes?
Yep. Okay. So I'm looking at Mercury Lux, LUX, right now. And yes, the display is exactly the same. I didn't look at any major manufacturers, if there is a generic component yet, but the list that I have sent you is over 100 of manufacturers. Anyhow, the next one is some fun with particle physics. Okay, I said that we may skip that subject, but it is Sabine Hossenfelder, dark matter, fundamental aspect of gravity, and it is up to you. If you want to say just few sentences about what you think about that video, and I would appreciate it. Back to you.
KC2GS. It's a bit down the rabbit hole, Wesley. I mean, what she's complaining about is that theoretical physicists whose specialty is theoretical particles are keep on wasting her time making her read articles about theoretical particles that fail to be proven. Especially, she particularly is annoyed with dark matter. Particle physicists have made up laundry lists of theoretical particles that so far haven't been proved to exist. They came up with supersymmetry, which gives you twice as many initial particles as the standard model does. She discussed WIMPs, weak interacting massive particles, and all kinds of things. And she doesn't like a particle explanation for dark matter. I think she prefers the other side are people who think that gravity, we don't quite have gravity right. One of the big problems that most physicists will agree upon is that you can't really, gravity is explained reasonably well using relativity. Everything else is explained reasonably well using quantum mechanics. You can't marry gravity to quantum mechanics. And at this point, they're having these weird discussions of whether they should try to quantize gravity or gravitize quantums. So, you know, they're in a mess of trouble. So the problem is that dark matter is a real hairy problem that physicists have yet to answer. And she feels that it's taking them too long. time's up, and they shouldn't mess around with writing articles about WIMPs and supersymmetry particles. They should, just kind of focus on figuring out where Einstein got something wrong when he very seldom gets anything wrong.
I absolutely agree with you. So she complained about a controversy with standard model of particle physics that collects fundamental particles in a certain bin that is not, that stays still, is not evolving. She complains about the interactions, and at the same time, we might say that not that far ago, a first human animal found how to make a fire. But it took quite some time to build a computer for the same animal. So, yeah. Let's go to the next one. It's a puzzle. Dr. Roy got it from the first shot. It took him probably about 30 seconds, maybe 1 minute, before he responded to it. What is the tallest mountain on the Earth? Again, the question is, what is the tallest mountain on the Earth? Anybody could comment on it?
Is AC2GS? Come on, guys. Give us a chance. The tallest mountain on this Earth of ours. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
The island of Hawaii, K20H.
Okay, I think you got cut in half. You probably have the right answer, but could you repeat it, please?
Island of Hawaii, the big island, K20H.
Okay, do you got a name?
It's Nick, K2NGH.
Okay, do you have a name for the landmass?
It's the overall island of Hawaii. I think it's Mauna Kea, if I remember right, but it's the seafloor to the peak that I believe is the tallest object on Earth.
Yep, you got it right. Well, Wes?
Wes to answer.
So, you got it right. Based on the available sources. However, and that I didn't send you. The article in the New York Times, but actually I sent you an hour ago in the list of the targets. So yes, we're talking about Mount Everest, elevation 29,032 feet, which is 8,849 meters, and according to recent measurements, because they measured the snow height, it's about 29.031 feet, so 29,031 feet and 8.5 inches. Mauna Kea, right. It's a dormant volcano in Hawaii, USA, and it's considered the tallest mountain in the world when measured from the base on the ocean floor. So the reason it's not Mount Everest is because Mount Everest is a part of larger Himalayan mountains ridge. So it is not by itself, it's not tall. And the information to find is very difficult. But if you look at the camps, because right now the cost of going to Mount Everest is about $30,000 per person,
to cover all of the expenses. The climber has to go about 5,000 meters, which is 16,404 feet, to get to the final camp. And then from that camp, they go to the Mount Everest by itself. So we talked about, 3,000 kilometers. I don't know how many in feet because I'm European. But anyhow, this story. Now, the controversy is that the New York Times, let me drop. Lee Chimbazo, Chimborazo. You have it in red in your email. A stratovolcano in Ecuador that is a part of Andes Mountains Ridge because it is the furthest point from the Earth center and therefore the highest in terms of the distance. According to Eddie Rosenberg from New York Times, Chimborazo summit rises 20,500 feet, which is 6.2 kilometers, 48 centimeters, above the sea level, which is shorter than Everest, but because of its location, is the tallest one. Okay, what do you say, Dr. Ray?
Well, you know, I mean, the problem is that we don't live on a sphere. We live on an oblong object that's fat around the center. So no one asked how high is the tip of the mountain from the center of the Earth. They asked how tall the mountain is. So, you know, I mean, semantics is a wonderful way to spend a person's life. So it really isn't telling the tallness of the mountain. It's just the girth of ground level is the distance from the center of the Earth to the equator is longer than to the poles. It's just what happens when you have a round object spinning in space.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul, you wanted to say something, please.
Okay, no, I tried before, but I guess I was doubling. Anyway, yeah, I was going to bring up the Ecuador story, but that's okay. I heard Wesley mention it. But very good. Back to you, Brian. I just wanted to also make sure I was making the repeater.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're loud and clear. Wesley?
Okay, so the next one. MIT researchers are making transparent solar cells that could turn everyday products such as windows and electronic devices into power generators. So, I sent that email to Dr. Roy. He has his own opinion, and I was very interested with his point of view at it. So, from one hand side, we have a big name, MIT, and from the other hand, I think Dr. Roy is right. Dr. Roy, please.
No, I was kind of saying that this is a nice research project to generate journal articles, and this is the life that these people live in, publish or perish, as the saying goes. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of problems with it. You know, it sounds neato. You know, some people who read a lot of popular science in the 60s might say that that's a neato thing to put on a car, electric car or something. But the problem is that you're diminishing the efficiency. The point of the exercise with solar cells is to increase the efficiency, decrease the cost, and increase the longevity. It's not to make it look neato. Windows are perfectly fine being windows. They don't need to be miserable solar cells. if you're going to limit the number of wavelengths that are going to be absorbed on the solar cell and change to electricity, you're going to diminish the efficiency. A lot of the light is going to go right through or reflected back out or what have you and not turned into energy. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't need a bunch of wires screwing up my window because I have to plug my window into something. So I think it's an interesting research project. I'm sure they wrote a very good journal article.